Good day, and welcome to Hiroshima University's English Podcast.
Hi, everyone. We're very happy to have you back again. I'm Pearline.
And Joe here.
Today, we have the final part of our podcast drama series, based on a short story by the British writer named Saki.
Yes. The name of Saki's short story today is...
The Lumber Room. In Japanese, it's called Monookibeya.
Pearline, when you were little, if there was a locked room filled with interesting, beautiful treasures, and an older person told you never to go in there, would you want to go in the room?
もしあなたが子供で、貴重な宝物や興味深いものばかりが入っている物置部屋に入ってはいけないと大人から言われたらどうしますか?
Yes, I would go in.
Well, today we have that type of mystery for everyone.
Sounds good. But before we get into the story, in part one, we told our listeners a little about Saki's life. Joe, could you tell us a little bit more about Saki?
Sure, Pearline. As we said, his mother died when he was young, and he was mostly raised in southwestern England by two aunts and a grandmother.
Oh, two aunts and a grandmother.
And those aunts were strict, Pearline.
Oh, 厳しい。
So, the strict aunts play a big role in several of Saki's short stories,including our story today.
I see. If we ever write fiction, it's often best to write about things in our own real lives, because we know them well.
Correct, Pearline. Write about things in your own life.
Last time, Joe, you told us that Saki became a famous journalist and short story writer. Did he live a long life?
Actually, no, Pearline.He was killed at a relatively young age. When World War I broke out, even though he was over 40 years old, he volunteered to join the British Army as a regular soldier to fight against the Germans. In 1916, in northern France, during a long series of battles, he was sheltering in a hole in the ground, but he was killed by a German sniper.
彼は40代で第一次世界戦争のイギリス軍隊に入り、ドイツと戦っていた時に亡くなりました。1916年にフランス北部で戦争が続き、地下で避難していた時にドイツの狙撃兵に殺されたのです。
Yes, he was killed at the age of 45.
What a pity. A lot of people were killed in World War I.
Right.We are very lucky to live in today's time period.
So, Joe, let's get right to our story today, The Lumber Room. Can you tell us the general outline of the story in easy words?
Sure. First of all, as the title says, it's about a lumber room.
Lumber...In American English, can be translated into 木材, right?
Yes, wood cut from trees. But in British English, it has a totally different meaning. A lumber room is a storage room in a British mansion. As you can imagine, rich people have so many interesting, beautiful things that they cannot show them in the main rooms. So...They store these treasures in a lumber room.
I see.
As we mentioned earlier, Saki had some strict aunts, and one of them plays a key role in our story today. The aunt keeps the lumber room door locked, so Nicholas, the main character, needs to trick the aunt so that he can get into the room to see the treasures.
皆さんがもう知っているように、サキさんには厳しいおばさんたちがいましたね。そのうちの一人のおばさんが今日の物語でとても大きな役になっています。
そのおばさんはいつも物置部屋に鍵をかけているので、主人公のニコラスが何とかおばさんを騙して物置部屋に入る方法を考えないといけないのです。
Somehow, he tricks her and gets into the room, but at the same time, the ant falls into and gets trapped in a rainwater tank.
どうにかしてニコラスはおばさんを騙し、物置部屋に入ることに成功します。しかし、おばさんは雨水のタンクに落ちてしまいます。
The ant is okay, but she needs help in getting out. Nicholas does not want to help this strict, cruel ant. So, interestingly, he uses her logic and rational way of thinking to justify refusing to rescue her.
おばさんは無事ですか？タンクから出るために助けが必要です。ニコラスはいつもひどくて厳しいおばさんなんて助けたくありません。なので彼はおばさんからいつも言われていることを悪用して、おばさんを助けない理由を正当化するのです。
Yes, it's a mischievous, humorous reaction by Nicholas.
いたずらこ。
And with that, let's listen to Hiroshima University's version of Saki's
The Lumber Room.
And after the story,We'll tell you about a couple of tourist places associated with Saki.
Sounds good.
The Lumber Room by Saki. The children were to be driven as a special treat to the sands at Jagborough.Nicholas, in trouble, was not to attend. Only that morning he had refused to eat his bread and milk, claiming there was a frog in it. Older and wiser people had told him that there could not possibly be a frog in his bread and milk, and that he was not to talk nonsense.But he continued and described in great detail the correlation and markings of the frog. You said there couldn't possibly be a frog in my bread and milk. There was a frog in my bread and milk, he repeated, with the insistence of a skilled tactician who does not intend to shift from favorable ground.So his boy cousin and girl cousin and his younger brother were to be taken to Jagborough Sands that afternoon, and he was to stay at home. His cousin's aunt, who insisted in calling herself his aunt also, had invited the Jagborough trip in order to impress on Nicholas the fun that he had given up.By his disgraceful conduct at the breakfast table. It was her habit, whenever one of the children misbehaved, to create some special trip from which the offender would be left out. If all the children sinned collectively, they were suddenly informed of a circus in a neighboring town, a circus of unrivaled merit.And uncounted elephants, to which, but for their depravity, they would have been taken that very day. As the party drove away, the aunt commanded,
You are not to go into the gooseberry garden.
Why not? Demanded Nicholas.
Because you are in trouble.
Said the aunt loftily. Nicholas did not admit the flawlessness of the reasoning. He felt perfectly capable of being in trouble and in a gooseberry garden at the same time. It was clear to his aunt that he was determined to get into the gooseberry garden.
Only...as she remarked to herself, because I have told him he is not to.
Now, the gooseberry garden had two doors
by which it might be entered. And once a small person like Nicholas slipped in there, he could basically disappear from view amid the growth of artichokes, raspberry canes, and fruit bushes. The aunt had many other things to do that afternoon, but she spent an hour or two in trivial gardening operations among flower beds and shrubberies, where she could keep a watchful eye on the two doors that led to the forbidden paradise. Nicholas made one or two trips into the front garden, wriggling his way with obvious stealth of purpose towards one or other of the doors, but never able for a moment to evade the aunt's watchful eye. As a matter of fact, he had no intention of trying to get into the gooseberry garden, but it was convenient for him that his aunt believed that he had. It was a belief that would keep her busy for the greater part of the afternoon. Having thoroughly confirmed her suspicions, Nicholas slipped back into the house and rapidly put into execution a plan of action that had long developed in his brain. By standing on a chair in the library, one could reach a shelf which held a fat, important-looking key. The key was as important as it looked, as it kept the mysteries of the lumber room secure from unauthorized intrusion. The key turned stiffly in the lock, but it turned. The door opened, and Nicholas was in an unknown land. Often, Nicholas had pictures what the lumber room might be like. It was so carefully sealed from youthful eyes, and about which no questions were ever answered. It lived up to his expectations. It was large and dimly lit, one high window opening onto the forbidden garden, being its only source of light, and was a storehouse of unimagined treasures. The aunt was one of those people who think that things spoil by use and consign them to dust and damp by way of preserving them. The parts of the house Nicholas knew best were bare and cheerless, but here there were wonderful things for the eye to feast on. There was a piece of framed tapestry that was evidently meant to be a fire screen. To Nicholas, it was a living, breathing story, telling of a story of a huntsman in some remote time period. Nicholas sat for many minutes, relieving the possibilities of the scene. But there were other objects of delight and interest claiming his instant attention. There were twisted candlesticks in the shape of snakes, and a teapot fashioned like a china duck, out of whose open beak the tea was supposed to come. How dull and shapeless the nursery teapot seemed in comparison. And there was a carved sandalwood box packed tight with aromatic cotton wool, and between the layers of cotton wool were little brass figures, hump-necked bulls, and peacocks and goblins. delightful to see and to handle. Less promising in appearance was a large square book with plain black covers. Nicholas peeped into it, and behold, it was full of colored pictures of birds. And such birds! In the garden and in the lanes when he went for a walk, Nicholas came across a few birds, of which the largest were an occasional magpie or wood pigeon. Here were herons and bustards, kites, toucans, tiger bitterns, brush turkeys, ibises, golden pheasants, a whole portrait gallery of undreamed-of creatures. As he was admiring the coloring of the mandarin duck and assigning a life history to it, the shrill voice of his aunt caught his attention. She had grown suspicious at his long disappearance and had leaped to the conclusion that he had climbed over the wall behind the screen of the lilac bushes. She was now engaged in energetic and rather hopeless search for him among the artichokes and raspberry canes.
"Nicholas! Nicholas!" she screamed. "You are to come out of this at once. It's no use trying to hide there. I can see you all the time."
The angry repetitions of Nicholas's name gave way to a shriek and a cry for somebody to come quickly. Nicholas shut the book, restored it carefully to its place in a corner, and shook some dust from a neighboring pile of newspapers over it. Then he crept from the room, locked the door, and replaced the key exactly where he had found it. His aunt was still calling his name when he sauntered into the front garden.
"Who's calling?" he asked.
"Me,"
came the answer from the other side of the wall.
"Didn't you hear me? I've been looking for you in the gooseberry garden, and I've slipped into the rainwater tank. Luckily, there's no water in it, but the sides are slippery and I can't get out. Fetch the little ladder from under the cherry tree."
"I was told I wasn't to go into the gooseberry garden," said Nicholas promptly.
"I told you not to, and now I tell you that you may,"
came the voice from the rainwater tank, rather impatiently.
"Your voice doesn't sound like aunt's,"
objected Nicholas.
"You may be the evil one tempting me to be disobedient. Aunt often tells me that the evil one tempts me and that I always yield. This time I'm not going to yield."
"Don't talk nonsense,"
said the prisoner in the tank.
"Go and fetch the ladder."
"Will there be strawberry jam for tea?"
asked Nicholas innocently.
"Certainly, there will be,"
said the aunt, privately resolving that Nicholas should have none of it.
"Now I know that you are the evil one and not aunt," shouted Nicholas gleefully.
"When we asked aunt for strawberry jam yesterday, she said there wasn't any. I know there are 4 jars of it in the store cupboard, because I looked. And of course you know it's there.
But she doesn't, because she said there wasn't any. Oh, devil, you have sold yourself.
There was an unusual sense of luxury in being able to talk to an aunt as though one was talking to the evil one. But Nicholas knew, with childish discernment, that such luxuries were not to be overindulged in. He walked noisily away, and it was a kitchen maid in search of parsley who eventually rescued the ant from the rainwater tank. Tea that evening was partaken of in a fearsome silence. The tide had been at its highest when the children had arrived at Jackborough Cove, so there had been no sand to play on, a circumstance that the aunt had overlooked in the haste of organizing her punitive expedition. The tightness of Bobby's boots had had a disastrous effect on his temper the whole of the afternoon, and altogether the children could not have been said to have enjoyed themselves. The aunt maintained the frozen muteness of one who has suffered undignified and unmerited detention in a rainwater tank for 35 minutes. As for Nicholas, he too was silent, in the absorption of one who has much to think about. It was just possible, he considered, that the huntsman would escape with his hounds while the wolves feasted on the stricken stag.
Joe, the final sentence is kind of hard and poetic. Can you repeat it for us?
Sure. The final sentence says, "The huntsman would escape with his hounds while the wolves feasted on the stricken stag."
In Japanese, that's like, "その狩り人は自分が射止めた鹿を狼たちがむさぶり食っている間に逃げたかもしれない." Everyone can imagine what that means in this story.
Yes, Nicholas was a mischievous guy.
いたずら.
Everyone, as we said in the first podcast, there are a lot of high-level, beautiful expressions in the story. But if you look at our word list, we think you will understand everything.
Yes.
Saki wrote some other famous short stories too. If you do an internet search, you can read them for fun.
Yes. Joe, before we finish today, could you tell us about a couple of tourist spots associated with Saki?
Sure, Paraline. One place is the town and huge mansion where Saki grew up as a child. It's called Barnstaple, Devon, also known as Devonshire, which is in southwest England. It's an old historic town. If you go there, you can see old, beautiful British buildings and walk around the town where Saki lived less than 150 years ago.
An historic British town in Devon sounds good.
And in London, at 97 Mortimer Street in the Westminster area, there's a beautiful blue sign commemorating the place where Saki lived as a journalist and wrote some of his stories.
Oh, his house in London. Everyone wants to go to London.
And finally, in northeastern France, in Picardy, you can see his name on a memorial near the spot where he died in the World War I battle.
Yes, if we go there, we can learn more about World War I.
Everyone, we probably cannot go to Europe this year because of the coronavirus problem. But next year, you can go there.
Yes, let's go to England and France next year.
In the meantime, keep having fun studying English.
And we'll see you next time at Hiroshima University's English Podcast.
Take care.
Take care.